want to welcome our Swinetine listeners. My guest is Dr. Luke Minion. Luke is, well, I'll just let you introduce yourself, but Luke has agreed to be with us for the next several minutes and we'll talk about a range of topics. And I thought I'll turn it over to Luke right now. And why don't you introduce yourself, Luke?
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here. My name's Luke Minion. I serve as the CEO at Pipestone, the chairman of the board at Holstone, and the chairman at Riverstone. My wife and our children live in Sioux Falls. My wife's name is Betsy. We have three kids, pretty similar ages to yours, Spencer. And Spencer and I have known each other all the way back since veterinary school, so we're going to act like we don't know this about each other through the podcast, but we know each other now for, what, 20?
Yeah, because it would have been about 98 or so.
3 years.
97. Yeah, 23 years, exactly. So what you guys don't know is that Luke is a year, 2 years younger than me, but a year ahead of me in school, which means he was 3 years smarter than me.
I actually agree with that.
Yeah.
So Luke. Yeah, no, but we were in vet school together. I was 1 year ahead of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in vet school at Minnesota. So we go back a long time. So it's my pleasure to be here. I look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, good. So every other podcast we've done, we've had somebody who wants to talk about something very specific and something that they have expertise in. For you, Luke, it was kind of like, what do you want to talk about? It could be a range of topics. So we came up with a couple ideas we'd like to cover. We sent out for questions from the listening audience. You know, what would you ask Luke? Got some feedback from that. I got a list of questions here, probably go through and just get your feedback on. And at some point, Luke, well, anywhere in there, if you want to just talk about stuff, have your liberty to do it. Just
sure.
Go with it.
Yeah, thanks.
So I guess to start off with here, first question comes in, says, how viable is this industry? Will producers make money in 2021? And do you think there will be profitability in the next 5+ years in, I guess, pork production as we think about it now or have thought about it? How would you frame that up?
Well, we didn't start with a softball there, Spencer. We kind of went right to the hard line. The pork industry in the U.S., I think, is pretty mature. And by that, I just mean there's a lot of very strong producers competing. And we're so export dependent now with something like 30%. The challenge, I think in 21 specifically, is what will trade look like with China and others if both short-term and long-term, if exports grow to higher than 30%, there will be some ability for the U.S. market to grow. I think what we're mostly all worried about is maybe that's not going to be the case, and if not, then what?
Mm-hmm.
So, short version is, I think that the industry will continue to be profitable, but I think that those that have the profit in the U.S. industry are going to be integrated, or at least more integrated, or more aligned, and those that are less integrated, probably more at risk than they were 5 years ago, and probably will be more at risk 5 years from now than they are today. And my reason for that, it's just this idea of how we share value in the chain between the consumer and the farmer. The farmer's at a pretty big disadvantage today to get their portion of the value. And that's what happens in mature industries. And we're pretty mature in my view. So I don't want to be doom and gloom. I think there's profitable producers today. There's been profitable producers in 2020, despite what we faced. And there's been profitable producers in my entire career. And I think there will be profitable producers going forward. But I think the way that they are arranged in terms of the assets they own, the revenue models that they face is going to be the biggest determinant for a while.
Okay. Just thinking about a couple things that seem to have come up in the last year. One is at the beginning of COVID and all the wheels falling off, it was super tight with supply of pigs and capacity to kill them. And then it drives the prices crazy down when you get any kind of a little glitch, which is what happened. Are we at any better balance point now? Did enough sows leave? Did we gain back enough capacity where that's at a sustainable balance, or is it still off kilter?
The harvest capacity getting interrupted by COVID obviously taught us all that without market access, pigs are worth zero, and even less than zero. I think that goes to my previous comments about how market access is owned and controlled. Specific to the sow inventory, this is the dilemma I see. The harvest plants and the food companies above or towards the consumer have a lot of fixed assets laid out for the current capacity of pork, which means it's hard to shrink the sow inventory substantially because then packing plants go empty. If packing plants go empty, the food margin gets less and so forth. So my personal view, I think we stopped growth in the U.S. on sows. I think we probably shrunk inventory some, but I don't think it's substantial. And I think any time that we get close to that truly being lower inventory, as long as there's a demand for the meat in the export markets, the plants aren't going to close, which means the farms won't close.
Right.
We're in a very tight equilibrium now in a mature industry, in my view.
Okay.
That make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, so you talk about the mature industry, and there's people playing the game now that are just very good at it versus what we would have had in the past. And I'm just thinking through my time since graduating school. It's like, all right, we got 10-year cycles that go on with some kind of a shakeout. We just went through like a 50-year shakeout or something in 21. Mm-hmm. It's some multi-decade level event that occurred. And I've got customers that are long customers that are to switch their business entirely or that have become contract growers. Mm-hmm. And so did we just go through a decade level shakeout that we're probably at some level of healing and stability for the next 10 years, or is this, there's no guarantees? How would you look at the next few years?
Oh, these are hard questions. I think we're in a cyclical business. It's always going to be that way to some degree. Commodity agriculture is. I would say that the ebbs and flows of supply and demand are so dependent on exports today that's like where I'd answer the question. And I say that, again, relative to 20 years ago, it just continues, that graph continues to go up. So look at our friends in Canada, look at our friends in certain places in Western Europe. When exports get 30, 40, 50% of an industry, you really live and die with it. Mm-hmm. The good news for our producers has been that we've been living with it. It's added a lot of value over the last decade. The question now is, will it the next? Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not trying to dodge the question. I would just say that there's volatility. There will always be some amount of volatility. But the two big issues on the demand side that I think are critical, one is exports, and two is, what's going to disrupt pork consumption domestically, like plant-based protein or others? Because it doesn't take a very large percentage of consumption to be reduced domestically, and we would also have a demand destruction.
Right.
So I have a bit of a concern about all these issues. When I get out and see folks, and I still go see a lot of producers, I just think that it's really important that we think both micro and macro. These are macro conversations we're having right now. That doesn't mean that inside my farm I can't be profitable next year or the next 5 years. Yeah. It's just, I think the autopilot function we've had, Spencer, in our careers is, if I want to make more money, I just raise more pigs.
Yep, just grow.
And I think that now needs to be really measured against, or if you will, differently than it has in the past. Could be reckless, especially if it's market access that's contract only in nature and only 3 years and so on and so forth.
Okay. Next question. Thanks. I didn't expect, there's no clear answer.
That's
on
a hard
question
one.
I
asked. Yeah.
And you know, it's like Luke was not evasive on answering the question. It was simply.
Well, I think it's like this. There's going to be a lot of profitable pig farmers.
Yeah.
But they're going to figure out what it takes to be profitable. And those that don't figure it out, they're going to leave the industry. And that's what's been going on for 20 years.
Yep. Okay. Next question. What is one of the biggest challenges? Of running a farm, and how do we overcome that challenge? What is one of the biggest challenges of running a farm? And I think probably from the producer angle, it would be a grow finish operation with ownership and a sow unit.
Yeah, no, I understand. So we do this business services thing called Farm Biz. I've had a chance to meet with many, many farm families over the last 12 months. I would say there's two or three key issues that almost always come up. One, revenue. How do I manage risk, get a market contract, whatever it is, but the revenue I get for my market hogs. Two is the transition plan. Who's going to own the farm? How do I move my ownership, again, to the next generation or whatever their case may be? But transition is a substantial amount of what I think the family farm faces. And third, I don't know if this is as, those are one and two almost every time. Third, it seems like, is more and more, what is my plan for the future? In other words, these questions you just asked. Should I raise more pigs? Should I own ethanol, you know, which is maybe not that relevant today, although still in the game. Mm-hmm. How to allocate capital and how to think about returns. This topic is emerging more all the time because of the previous conversation.
Right.
People wondering about, well, kind of was simple, build another sow farm, get me more pigs, I'll build another barn, I'll buy another 40, blah, blah, blah. That's starting to be more questioned.
Sure. Yeah, just, exactly. One of the things that you just mentioned was the transition question. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of back before Sean Simpson, our legal counsel, was on staff here. He was with Leonard Street and Diner. Mm-hmm. And I remember a meeting where that was a big topic, was just the transition. That was 12 years ago.
Is that right?
It was a long time ago.
Wow.
It seemed like years and years ago. Yeah. It was a question then. It's still a question now.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you would say that would be the biggest item or one and two items.
Well, you asked what producers. I would say there's always the things inside the, you know, the health of my pigs and so forth. Those are always ever present and they're important. I'm not dismissing them, but I think having listened, I just listen. The whole thing at the farm is, the other one I should mention is people, labor. How do I get the work at the farm done? I'm not ignoring what I call the table stakes of the business. I have to be able to keep my pigs healthy. I have to be able to, you know, buy things at a competitive price and so forth. But I'd say the overarching question that a lot of people are really trying to come up with are the things I've mentioned. Who's going to own the farm? How do I transition that ownership? How do I get the labor needed to grow if I am growing? Or if I'm, let's say, changing or aging or whatever, that issue. And then everybody's figured out that if you're not in the top third of revenue, you're at such a disadvantage today that everything else pales.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Thinking about topics for other podcasts or episodes, I've wanted to get our HR director, Nicole, on just to talk about the labor thing because you go to the farms and you kind of take it for granted.
Yeah.
And then the farm staff or the manager says, oh, I wish we get another person here. This last person wasn't a good fit or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you realize, like, this is really hard. And you talk to producers, maybe an independent to produce somewhere getting his own labor lined up, and it's not just hard. I've had guys that have been at the edge of shutting their business down because they couldn't hire somebody.
Yeah, it's a real
issue.
Stop
their business.
It's a real issue.
All right, next question. What should producers do to stay financially stable in the business? You mentioned things, I have heard risk management along with just being more efficient in the balance of the two. You know, you're going to buy a plant to be more risk averse or stable, or you're going to do it for efficiency and profitability, or both?
Again, such a big question. I would say all these producers don't come to the table with the same starting position nor the same ambition. In what I mean by that is there's lots of ways to look at financial, I think you said stability?
Yeah, stability. Yeah. The question was stability.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a bit more about this all throughout next year because given my previous remarks about how there's these choices, these trade-offs, my grandfather and probably parents called pigs the mortgage lifter. And probably in our listener audience, there's a bunch of people who still would think somehow that the pigs paid the bills. And so, again, to the extent that that is, let's say, an accepted view for most of the folks listening to here today, the word financially stable turns out to be balancing how much capital we have in land, in our production assets, whatever those may be, barns and so forth, probably now in our packing plants, and the relative risk we're willing to take with the leverage. And what I see the most successful producers do, they get those points well in view for their operation. And some producers have a lot more tolerance for risk than others, which means they usually carry higher amounts of leverage. Some producers the opposite, but in any case, I think the word stability is hard because it's more about what's your strategy. And when you have a high leverage, let's say risk tolerance, then you have to probably have a high risk management profile, and vice versa. If you don't want to manage price risk much, you're probably someone with low leverage, and either can compete very well, but they're very different strategies.
Okay.
So the word financial stability, yeah, I've learned to just
define
say,
it, however.
Whew, it really depends. What I would try to say to the producers that may be listening here is just really matters what's your goal and how are you thinking about the word stability. Stability has to be defined there. That's the hard mm-hmm. work. And that's what can be done through these discussions, whether it's through Farm Biz or others. I just would say that turns out to be a really helpful discussion for producers to answer that question.
Sure. I just think it's just stability is don't turn the boat over. What do you got to do to not turn the boat over? Either don't sail too fast or sail really fast with a really deep keel or something. Basically,
yeah,
you're going to have to do something
yeah.
with it so you
yeah.
don't flip the boat over. That's... It could be two different approaches. Next question. COVID shook our foundation. Do you think this is an ongoing issue or it's going to be an ongoing issue? And what is the best guess to the next 5 years of what society might look like? So this goes beyond pigs probably, but you've got a year full of this stuff for the last several months with Holstone involvement mm-hmm. and running our company. What do you think for COVID? Is this a flash in the pan or is this the new life?
We're all optimistic, I think. At least I am, that the vaccines are going to be effective. I think the early stuff we're all reading and seeing now would suggest that. I think that is when there'll be an opportunity to turn some of the tide, if you will. The infectivity rate that's happening now is going to create some amount of herd immunity. But until those things are actually fully implemented, which in my view could take all the way to Q3 or Q4 of 21, vaccine's going to come, but then it's going to be mm-hmm. slow, and then there's going to be people who don't want to take it and so forth. I don't think the world's going to be quote-unquote like it was for a long time. Think of how we've all now been conditioned to stay 6 feet apart and to wear a mask and how we're all going to do that for 2 full years of our life. Our kids are all going to learn that, and then we're just going to say, oh, it doesn't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll go back to some amount, but I think it will have burned into our memories something that could be sort of lifelong for our generation.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, that'll fade. And I personally think it will fade, but I don't think it'll be forgotten.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. All right. If you look back in the last 20 years, what major advancements or changes has Pipestone or the swine industry adapted? And what impact has this made on the swine production today? So talking about innovation, just advance. What are the big events for industry advancement? 20 years.
20 years. There's a lot of what I would call incremental advances. For example, genetics incrementally advance over that time, and the cumulative effect of the genetic change is amazing. When mm-hmm. we first graduated, if you were 22 to 24 pigs per sow per year, you were top.
Mm-hmm.
Now you need to be 34 to be top. So that's just the slow incremental advance. All of those achievements should not be discounted in that statement. The profound, totally different, new game-changing list. I think these gene-edited discoveries are profound. I personally don't support them in the supply chain yet because I don't think they help consumer demand, but they are profound, right? It's a major difference that you can edit the genome and affect disease. I think things like filtration were pretty profound. We found ways to mitigate disease risk. And I don't want to ignore the incremental advancements, you know, all of the barns and the ventilator. Those are all things better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
But the barn design of 20 years ago and the barn design of today, it's not that different. So I think the challenge for us, to some extent, is to look beyond sometimes the things that we want to disagree with from activists' views or, let's say, those that we think oppose us, sometimes those are opportunities for us to be more bold. And I think that is back to what a producer of tomorrow is going to look like. I think some of those things are going to be an opportunity for some, and they're going to be rejected by others. No different than in the 1980s, some saw putting sows inside as an opportunity, and some saw it as, I'm leaving the industry. Mm-hmm. I think those are the things that are going to be kind of out the windshield. What's out the back mirror? Lots of incremental advancements, tremendous improvements in our everything, pick it. But I don't know that I could point to, like, wow, it's a totally different game. It's an incrementally improved game.
Okay. And there's nothing like this COVID thing hasn't really, other than a lot of stress, any advancement or significant change that's going to come out of this, other than some people will leave because of the stress of it.
I think it's just going to reinforce some of these things that I'm not, maybe it won't, but I think it's just going to reinforce that market access is so critical, and who owns it and how it gets controlled. It just got highlighted even more.
Yeah.
The disease and pandemic control in humans, right, and how it affects our industry. We definitely will never forget that. But what to do about it? You know, there's some out there that think we need to redesign our packing plants and we need to go to small scale and all these types of things. I listen carefully to those. I think about those, but I doubt it. We're pretty darn efficient in the pig business at getting pork to a consumer, and the middle of the curve consumer, in my view, still wants a very strong value proposition, mm-hmm. which means, in part, right, price. And so to break all these things that have been built on an economic model to say we're going to go back to some higher price but more redundant, I hear it. I'm not ignoring it, but I doubt it.
So I stopped by the grocery store last night. My wife said she wanted to eat steak for supper. She's on something for her diet. She wanted steak. And so I get a steak, and then I got 3.5 to 4 times as much weight with the pork that I bought for the rest of the family. And I mentioned it many times, but it's amazing. The value proposition of pork is incredible when you look at what it is.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, value proposition, definitely a great product for the price. What's next for Pipestone? Where do you see Pipestone heading in the next 10 years? So for our group here, and our producers and the folks we work with, what do you think 10-year window and the next big steps that'll probably come?
Yeah, well, first it's just important to say thanks to the listeners, all of you that are customers and clients and shareholders. Without you, we wouldn't be here. And I think that's where we're going. We need to stay helpful to farmers. And I think that the needs of the farmers will guide what Pipestone does if we're doing our job well. So whether that's these farm business services that Jim Marzoff has shared, or it's the management services, or it's making global investments like we're going to offer through Riverstone, or trying to help facilitate a packing plant ownership like Holstone, the key to Pipestone has been, and I really have a strong passion and share it, we, of course, Spencer, share a team, it's all about the farmer. So if we can understand what the farmers need and somehow be able to help meet that need, I think Pipestone's on a great future trajectory. And for as much as some may take the comments about the industry and say it's mature and it's over, I look at it and say it's mature, but we have plenty of room to grow as producers and as Pipestone. I've actually never been more excited about the future in terms of all of the things we have to offer and to do together with farmers.
Okay. All right, that generally wraps it up. Do you have anything you wanted to talk about in particular?
No, other than saying thanks again to everybody that works with us, supports us in any way. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, then not pig-related, or maybe pig-related, but probably not. I want to ask you a couple questions. One is, what's your greatest pleasure in life?
I think that's a deep question. I think I really take joy in having people genuinely believe that I or we helped them. I got a thank you card from a producer here about a month ago. And this is a producer that I've known for 20, or a long time. 20 years wouldn't be an exaggeration. And the card is so heartfelt. It's a whole card of nice things. And in the card it says, you know, thanks for just taking the time to come and talk to us. And I think, why would I not come and talk to him? I've known him for 20 years. I care deeply about him. But what I'm trying to say is, I think what gives me joy in terms of this part of life is just, I really like helping people, really enjoy it, when I know they feel that way. So that might be right or wrong, but or you know what you asked or not, but mm-hmm. I do enjoy very much the idea that people look at me or our activities here at Pipestone and say, you know, they genuinely helped us.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need me to tell you more nice things about yourself, but I've encountered employees in Barnes that I think you worked with as their vet 15 years ago or somebody, and they would say, yeah, Luke remembered my baby was born, or, you know, some comment like that.
So yeah.
You have a little bit of a special ability to connect with a lot of people.
Yeah, thanks.
So, all right, last question. I know you as a man of faith, and I imagine you went to Sunday school, and you'll have some kind of answer for this, but if I asked you regarding yourself, King David or King Solomon, and I'll just stop there.
Yeah.
And Luke.
Yeah. So I appreciate that question. And you and I share this. I would say over time, we're just, in my view, sinners saved by grace. And really think about that in my life. So King Solomon or King David? I would say King David. Just the idea of the passion I have to give glory to God in my actions. King Solomon would be a little presumptuous because I don't think I'm the wisest guy. I think the blessings I've had in my life have been to be exposed to people that have been so helpful to me. Hopefully that's true for me someday with those around me.
Yeah. All right. Luke, I thank you for being here. Thank you for being, a great boss. Actually, you're my boss's 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 boss, I think. But, yeah. And a good friend.
Yeah.
And a good person to be around.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Okay,
Swine Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country. Hosted by me, Dr. Spencer Wayne, with the Pipestone Veterinary Services. The podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Monthly podcasts are available on Spotify, Google Music, iTunes, Anchor, and on www.pipestone.com.